Our fourth case this morning is 2021-153 in the matter of the application of Icebreaker Wind Power Incorporated for a certificate of environmental compatibility and public need for an electric generating facility in Cuyahoga County. We will start with the appellant, Mr. Tucker.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Mark Tucker. I represent the appellants in this case. With me at counsel table is my co-counsel, John Stock. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This case is about the Power Siting Board's authorization of a wind electric generation facility unlike any other in the United States. As the applicant's name indicates, it is an icebreaker, the first time ever that wind turbines will be situated in one of the Great Lakes. The applicant proposes to erect six such large wind turbines in Lake Erie, one of Ohio's most precious natural resources. The General Assembly has established a process for the siting of such wind generation facilities, a process that is by now well established and that requires the Power Siting Board to make certain findings prior to the issuance of the certificate. Appellants maintain that Icebreaker did not and cannot make these showings on the state of the record in this case. As we sit here today, there is not one person in this courtroom, or anywhere for that matter, that can tell you how many birds and bats fly through the rotor swept zone at the project site. We were repeatedly reminded of all the studies that Icebreaker has submitted and the data they've collected with regard to bird and bat migration, but no one can deny this fact. There has been no collection of that data at the project site, despite the fact that ODNR and the Fish and Wildlife Service have urged Icebreaker to collect this data since at least 2008. Despite the board's issuance of a certificate for this one-of-a-kind project, no one, including the board, can know the environmental impacts of this project without the collection of this vital data at the project site. Indeed, the board implicitly, if not expressly, admitted this by the inclusion of what's called the board review condition. What that condition says is, we're going to give you a siting certificate, but we're not going to let you commence construction of the project unless and until you come back to us with 2 years of radar data collected from the project site and a bird and bat mitigation plan that includes proven technology to detect bird and bat collisions with the wind turbines. Because 4906.10a requires the board to make these findings before the issuance of the certificate, not sometime later, we would urge the court to reverse the decision of the Power Siting Board. I understand that the siting process is, I think this court said, not a static one. It's fluid. The board can set conditions and come back. But the court said that in a case we're dealing with where we dealt with the exact model of turbine that was going to be used, or whether we were going to move a turbine from here 200 yards over that way. The board cannot, I would argue, set conditions that say, we're going to skip over this statutory condition for the issuance of the certificate and come back to it later, after you've collected all the data that you should have been collecting since 2008, at least, or at least since the filing of the application. Indeed, the board has acknowledged that the collection of the radar data from the project site is necessary. And I refer the board or the court to the board's May 21st order at paragraph 107, where we affirm that it is a necessary condition in order to ensure that the project represents the minimum adverse environmental impact. So,
well, isn't there a difference between the probable environmental impact, which is what they're required to determine at this juncture, and the actual environmental impact? That statement you just read seems consistent with that.
Yeah, I would agree. There's a difference between the probable environmental impact and the actual environmental impact. And the actual environmental impact can't be established until things are up and running and you actually know what they're going to do. We would argue that with regard to the probable environmental impact, without this data, you can't know what the probable environmental impact. For instance, when birds get over water, do they lower because there are no obstructions as there are on land? Do they fly right through the rotor swept zone of these turbines? Nobody really knows because no data has been collected. But even if you can say that Icebreaker could establish the nature of the probable environmental impact, they can't get past A3, which is that this project represents the minimum adverse environmental impact. And that's what I just read from the board's decision. They said this information is necessary to make that determination, and yet it doesn't exist. And the board's review condition says, okay, we're going to issue this certificate, which we say they shouldn't have done, but we're going to let you go back. And now you got 2 years you have to come back to us with 2 years of radar data collected at the project site before we're going to allow you to begin construction. Well, that's not what the General Assembly has said.
So you would say they should have outright rejected the certificate and told them, until you can get this or obtain this data, you can't get
absolutely, Your Honor. I mean, and it's not like this is foisted upon them at the last minute, saying, oh, now you need to go back and get this data because we've decided all of a sudden that it's necessary. They've been urged to collect this data since at least 2008. And in fact, originally, board staff rejected or recommended the rejection of the siting certificate because of this data, in large part because this data is missing. So, I mean, this is not a situation like Buckeye Wind where we're imposing a condition that we may move a wind turbine 200 yards or you may choose a different model. We're talking about one of the things that the General Assembly says you have to establish to get a certificate in the first instance. And they haven't done that here. And so we would urge the court.
Were there any birds and bats studies in existence that were submitted?
Yeah, there were lots of birds and bats studies submitted, but
about this area?
Not at the project site, Your Honor.
Not offshore or nearshore parts of Lake Erie?
Yeah. And I assume you're referring to the NEXRAD radar study, but that doesn't determine the altitude at which the birds are flying. So you don't know whether they're flying through the rotor swept zone or above it. And that is, nobody can know that without this data conducted at the radar site or at the project site. And, you know, we had the whole process stopped for a while because they said, well, you have to tell us how you're going to collect this data. So they just submitted what was called the deal report. And the deal report said, well, we think we're going to put it on a floating barge, despite the fact that all the evidence suggested that a fixed platform would collect more reliable data. Okay, so the board said, we're going to make whatever you choose has to collect, I believe the cutoff was 75% accurate data. I'm using a shorthand here. And that's one condition that perhaps the board can do, but they have to have the data in the first instance to get the certificate, and they simply don't have it. Never submitted it, never collected it, never tried. This is something that they could have done. They could have put a floating barge, okay? Maybe in our view, that wouldn't have been the best way to collect it, but they didn't even try it. And that's our problem. The second condition in the board's original certificate that it imposed was what we'll call the feathering condition, which is during the peak migration period for, I think it was 8 or 9 months of the year, we're going to make you feather these turbines at night when birds would be flying over the lake. And the board said, well, we're going to say that this is necessary to ensure that this project represents the minimum adverse environmental impact. And then a motion for rehearing is filed, and all of a sudden that condition, despite having been necessary for that A3 factor, disappears. The board said, we're not going to require it. Going back to the board review condition, I would liken it to this. You go into court and you ask for a preliminary injunction, and you say, I can prove 3 of the 4 factors that I need to get this preliminary injunction. I can't really show likelihood of success on the merits right now, but issue the injunction anyway, and as this case proceeds, then I'll come up with that and I'll prove it later. So issue the injunction now and I'll prove my case later. The General Assembly is very clear. And this court was said in the Ohio Edison case that it has to make these determinations under point 10A before it issues the certificate. In this case, I think the very inclusion of the board review certificate saying come back to us with this evidence later shows that they didn't make that showing prior to the issuance of the certificate. And I'd like to briefly discuss the public trust doctrine. I mean, the board says we don't have jurisdiction to decide that because ODNR has the authority to issue subleases for Lake Erie. That's true, they do. But our argument is not that we're not challenging the issuance of the subleases. What we're saying is that doesn't deprive the board of its authority, indeed duty, to make the determination under point 10A6 that the erection of these turbines, the siting of this project in Lake Erie, is in the public interest. And I think that's part of the public trust doctrine, and that the board's shirking its responsibility, simply stepping back and saying, well, we don't have jurisdiction to decide that because ODNR already issued the subleases. And with that, Your Honor, unless there are any further questions, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, first we'll have Mr. Simmons.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. My name is Cameron Simmons on behalf of the Ohio Power Siting Board. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for Attorney Seacrest on behalf of Icebreaker. Your Honors, this court should affirm the decision of the board because it's comprehensive, reasonable, and fully in accordance with the law. Specifically, the board made all the statutory findings necessary to issue a certificate and properly determined that it does not have jurisdiction to consider issues on the propriety of the submerged land lease. I'd like to begin with the procedural aspect that was mentioned by opposing counsel. Essentially, opposing counsel focuses on the fourth sentence of the statute, 4906.10A. In that sentence, enumerates the factors that must be found by the board. The board clearly made all those findings at the time it issued the certificate. What the board did was issue the certificate subject to certain conditions, which is clearly authorized by the first sentence of the very same statute, 4906.10A. So down the road, the board will not be making new findings. The board will be merely ensuring that the conditions are complied with. That's a big distinction. This court, as recently in September in the Duke Energy case, clearly held that the board is plainly empowered to use conditions as part of the certificate process. And that makes sense. These are long-term projects, and there needs to be safeguards not only for wildlife, but for public safety as well. I'd also refer the court to the Buckeye Wind case, where this court indicated the certificate process was a dynamic process that does not end with the issuance of the certificate. Importantly, in Buckeye Wind, the court held that the board can, as a condition, require the review and acceptance of plans. And that's essentially what's going on here, is down the road, there'll be radar data that will be submitted, and there will be the pre-collision monitoring technology. And essentially what the board will be doing is make sure that the items that are submitted comply with the conditions imposed as part of the certificate.
So what happens if they don't?
Your Honor, if they don't meet those conditions, they cannot proceed with construction. There are prerequisites for construction. They have to meet the threshold. For the radar data, it needs to be 75% of reliable data. That's the threshold. So essentially, the board is ensuring that that data will meet that. And the board did indicate it would rely on staff and ODNR, and I believe the condition also allows for input from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
So why don't you get all of that first before you get your certification or your certificate like the statute suggests? Because the board report at paragraph 2 says, while we find that the probable environmental impact can be addressed, as a first-of-its-kind project, the actual impacts of the facility are naturally unknown. So they've recognized in the very opening of their report, they don't know the probable impact. So why grant a certificate when that is a requirement to granting?
Your Honor, the board did make a finding that the nature of the probable impact could be determined. There were numerous studies, as the court has already referenced. In addition, there was a wind placement favorability analysis. The mere fact that this project is going to be 8 to 10 miles off the coast of Lake Erie eliminates some of the traditional risks of wind farms. For example, there's no habitat destruction concerns. There aren't concerns with proximity towards nesting because, again, you're going to be at least 8 to 10 miles from the shoreline where nesting concerns are. And
so they don't fly there?
There's not the nesting concerns. There are migration concerns. But importantly, I direct this court to the expert testimony that was presented in this case, specifically Mr. Todd Mabee, who testified that pre-construction radar does not predict post-construction risk. And that's at page 763 of the transcript. Essentially, the purpose of the pre-construction radar is to form a baseline, to understand what's happening at the project site before anything goes up. Then those same studies are repeated after construction to determine if the birds are being attracted to the turbines, potentially as a perch, to determine if the birds are avoiding the turbines and flying over them. So the importance of that data actually goes to the A3 factors to ensure the project represents the minimum environmental impact.
So what happens then if a study's conducted afterwards and you find that there is an environmental impact, maybe even a substantial one?
In that case, the recourse would be there would be adaptive management, which could include feathering of the turbines to address that plan. Essentially, the company would work with ODNR and others to determine the amount of what to do to solve that problem. It could be more feathering.
Would there be a requirement to do so? Either feathering or some other maybe more drastic measures, maybe moving the structure?
I'm not sure if moving the structure would be, I believe the requirement would be they'd have to impose adaptive management as part of their mitigation plan to avoid those risks.
And there would be the requirement to do so.
Yes, yes. And obviously that, you know, the solution to that problem would be dictated by the actual problem in consultation with the experts. The board made a factual finding that there was enough evidence before it based on the small size of the project, the experts who described this as having the lowest impact. Dr. Gordon said this would have the lowest impact of any of the 100 projects that he has worked on. And the board made a factual determination that it had enough evidence in the record to make the A2 determination. Essentially, appellants disagree with that factual conclusion. However, as the court held in the Duke Energy case, their disagreement does not equate to an abuse of discretion on the part of the board. I'd like to turn to the minimum adverse environmental impact, and that is ensured by the numerous conditions that the board imposed. And those conditions were came about through the revised stipulation, which is subject to substantial weight under the three-part test that's been endorsed by the board. Specifically, those conditions, one of those conditions protects threatened and endangered species. If there's impacts to threatened and endangered species, again, mitigation efforts must be implemented to resolve those. The radar protocol, I'll note that the radar protocol for this case is nearly twice as long as that is required for land-based projects. In addition, there's a minimum required baseline of reliable data of 75% of the time. So there will be data for the board to consider as to whether there's impacts when compared to the post-construction studies. Importantly, there are two feathering conditions, and condition 18 and 23 need to be viewed in conjunction. Essentially, what condition 18 requires is that the applicant will develop and test their technology to detect the bird strikes on the turbines before they begin construction, and that technology will be fully implemented before they're authorized to begin operations. The difference between this and a land-based process is the method of detecting collisions. In land-based projects, the consultants will go out and actually count the carcasses, count the dead birds. Obviously, that presents difficulties in an open water setting, so there's different technologies that will be used to detect those collisions, such as high-definition cameras and sensors on the turbines themselves. Once that technology is in place, if for some reason it is not operating, the facility will be subject to feathering, and feathering is just the slowing or stopping of the blades so they don't cause a risk to birds, until it's resolved. Alternatively, if it's working as expected, if there are a certain number of bird strikes within a 24-hour period, and that number is 21, and that's based on a 59% effective rate of the collision monitoring technology, then again, adaptive management, which would be feathering, would be required to be implemented to protect the birds and the bats.
So the earlier restrictions over here on your right, the earlier restrictions that were or conditions that were placed and then pulled back were pulled back because a process was developed, correct?
So there were a variety of different feathering conditions, both at the adjudicatory hearings, and then there were different feathering conditions between the board's May decision and its October decision. But yes, at the initial adjudicatory hearing, staff recommended a different feathering condition, because at that time, the technology was not required to be demonstrated before construction began. Essentially, it would be a trial period where the technology would be demonstrated as it operates.
In the revised, if you're going to leave some time for your for the attorney representing Icebreaker, you're into it now.
Yes, and I would just ask briefly to address the second proposition of law to affirm the board's decision that it does not have jurisdiction over the submerged lands lease issue that's under the exclusive jurisdiction of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. We'd ask that the board's decision be affirmed.
Thank you. Mr. Sechrist.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. The board based its decision on an extensive record of studies and analyses that it repeatedly cited to in its decision. In making that decision, the board was not alone. The Department of Energy and Fish and Wildlife Service also looked at this project and determined it posed a low risk to avian and bat species. That low risk was informed by the testimony of expert witnesses with years of experience studying the interaction between wind energy and wildlife, particularly assessing the impacts of wind energy on avian and bat species. Those experts testified that the risk of this project was vanishingly small. There are a few reasons for that. One, as noted by Mr. Simmons, applicant chose to site this project 8 to 10 miles offshore, relying on guidance from ODNR's wind placement favorability analysis. More importantly, though, the applicant looked at 42 land-based mortality studies for avians and looked at 52 land-based mortality studies for bats. These were all conducted within the Great Lakes region. These studies informed the low-risk nature of this project, particularly with regard to avian species. The nature of broad front migration that these species engage in, which is essentially a blanket of birds flying over the entire Great Lakes region, dictates that the same species that fly over these 42 terrestrial projects, which were reviewed, are going to be flying over the project site. The mortality rates at the 42 land-based projects were remarkably consistent, 2 to 4 birds per megawatt hour per year. That's consistent with the experts' experience nationwide. That's particularly applicable in this case because of the broad front nature of migration, but also indicates that the risk here is actually probably lower than the land-based. The experts had testified, and the board acknowledged, there was no evidence in front of it indicating that birds were at greater risk due to an offshore facility, but there was evidence that birds might actually be at a lower risk. And that is because there is no nesting habitat. There is no stopover habitat. Birds are not going to be descending from their high altitude migration to land at the project site. With regard to specific studies at the project site, there have been. There was a 3-year radar study conducted comparing the project site to 6 other sites in the Great Lakes region, both in water and on land, to determine the intensity of migration. Those studies revealed that the level of migration at the project site was lower than any of these other 6 sites. The experts testified this was a cold spot in the lake for migration. I heard a reference to vital data from opposing counsel in terms of the passage rates. That's a red herring, Your Honors. The passage rates pre-construction have not been shown, and the United States Fish and Wildlife Service wind energy guidelines specifically state this. They have not been shown to be a predictor of post-collision mortality risk.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Just briefly, Your Honor, I think what we've heard is there are studies, and I think I said this in my opening argument, but none of them can tell you the altitude that the birds are flying over the lake and whether they will, in fact, go through these turbines' rotor swept zone. I think what I heard, and I don't want to speak for opposing counsel, but I think what I heard was, well, we need this radar data that we're going to make them collect 2 years of this 75% accurate radar data so we can decide whether it meets A3. And our position is that's the very decision they should have made that the General Assembly commanded them to make before the issuance of the certificate in the first instance. And I would go back to the board's own words, and it's in a couple places. at paragraph 107 of the May 21st order, here we determine that pre-construction radar is not necessary in this proceeding to evaluate the project's expected impact on birds and bats, but we affirm that it is a necessary condition in order to ensure that the project represents the minimum adverse environmental impact. That's the board's own words. That's the A3 factor. So the board's admitting, in effect, that they don't have that data. And I refer to also paragraph 161 of the board's May 21st order, where they make essentially the same comment. With regard to the public trust doctrine, we are not challenging the fact of the land leases. We are saying that the board has a duty to determine whether the erection of these turbines in Lake Erie is in the public interest. And that, by necessity, takes into account the public trust doctrine, that the lake is held in trust for the citizens of the state of Ohio. Not just ODNR in issuing the leases has a role in that, but the Power Siting Board also has a role in determining whether that's in the public interest. Unless the court has any further questions, we would respectfully urge the court to reverse the issuance of the siting certificate in this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.